there. Welcome to Dr. Ray Talks It Over, the program designed for parents and families, where the aim is to help you stand strong as a parent for the sake of your children. I'm your host, Jerry Usher, with Dr. Ray Guarendi, father of 10, psychologist, and author. Dr. Ray, how you doing?
Hello, Jerry. It's wonderful to be with you.
Today we're going to talk about, is my child normal?
Your child in particular, or just anybody's child?
Like, a lot of people may be asking themselves this question. We may all ask ourselves this question, am I normal? I guess it begs the question right off the top, what is normal?
What is normal? I have to believe that what Jesus Christ would have said is desirable, our culture would no longer view as normal. And I think that's a critical point for Christian parents. Instead of looking at the question, is my child normal, we need to ask the question, is my child doing right? Instead of looking at, is it normal for siblings to mistreat each other, because it is, we need to ask the question, is it good for siblings to mistreat each other? In psychology circles, what has happened is that the question, is it normal, has replaced, is it right? Of course it's normal for 4-year-olds to throw temper fits. Of course it's normal for 6-year-olds to lie. Of course it's normal for 12-year-olds to get lippy. Of course it's normal for people to sin. It's typical. It's not good. And that's the question. So what is normal is like trying to define love. I think for Christian parents, normal has to be defined as, what does our faith teach us about what is good to have as part of our makeup?
Sounds like what you're saying then is really the only way to understand children is to view them through the lens of the human condition, through a lens of faith, in fact, because the world wants to say misbehavior, i.e. siblings quarreling and so forth, is, quote, normal. Whereas, while it may be normal, it may be natural, but that's a fallen nature. So the faith has to play a part in this if we're going to view this properly.
I don't know if it was C.S. Lewis who said, you know, if there is a God, then those people who do not believe in him are living a delusion, because he is ultimate reality. And to simply blatantly ignore ultimate reality is to live a lie, an illusion. Therefore, with our children, all people of faith have to phrase all questions of normalcy in terms of, what does my faith teach me about what is desirable and good?
You have a term you've coined, enlightened parents' disease. What is that?
First-year medical students get accosted by literally hundreds of diseases. And as they read these things and they see these lists of symptoms, there is an affliction that first-year medical students suffer from. Medical students' disease. If they have a headache, maybe it's a brain tumor. If they have a headache, maybe it's clogged arteries. If they have a headache, maybe it's something involving the retinal neurology of their eye, because they've read about these things. There's a similar affliction that affects parents, enlightened parent disease. The idea that my child might not be normal, it is reflected in questions like, you know, my son likes to play by himself. Is that normal? My daughter has this imaginary friend that she talks to at night when she lays in bed, and before she falls asleep, she talks. Is that typical? Is that normal? So many questions are now phrased with the little addenda. Is that normal? Is that typical? Classic. I was speaking to a group, it was last night or the night before, and a lady raised the question that the preschool teacher told her that her 4-year-old son, she was a little concerned, because although he was a nice boy, there was this other boy in class that acted up, and her 4-year-old son had a tendency to follow this boy. And if this boy did something wrong, her son was tempted to do something wrong. This shook Mom up, because she was wondering about her child's adjustment. And I giggled. I couldn't help it. I giggled. I said, Mom, he's 4 years old. He really has no conscience yet. He sees a kid acting up. That's pretty appealing. And I would think it's the most natural thing in the whole world to be attracted to that. But you see, the question Mom was asking was, is he normal? Is he normal? I want to know if he's normal. Just tell me he's normal. I'll say, okay, he's normal. Now, what he's doing's not good, and we got to deal with it. That's the question. Parents are so frightened that every little squeak and scrape and squirk and squibble is somehow indicative of some kind of development that'll, if left unchecked, could be psychologically pretty aberrant.
How do parents deal with that?
First rule, normal is very broad. You have to go a long way to be abnormal. How shy is too shy, Jerry? How aggressive is too aggressive? How active is too active? How impulsive is too impulsive? How fretting is too fretting? See, it's a judgment call. That's the first thing. Second thing, for something to be a problem, it really kind of has to happen over and over and over and over. It has to be repetitive. Every kid's going to steal, for example, once or twice during childhood. I mean, we all did. It's just something you did. But when a parent looks at a behavior like that, oh my, their moral world sometimes comes crumbling down because they go, I never taught him anything like that. Where would he learn anything like that? Well, it was probably there. Probably nobody was watching, and he took it. Now, we'll deal with it, and we'll teach him how wrong that is. But the fact that he took it is not indicative of anything most of the time other than he just took it. Now, if you have a kid who chronically steals, yeah, you got some problems there, and you got to have some real firm action. Another example of this would be lying. I call it the terrible two, lying and stealing. In and of themselves, virtually most kids do it as they're growing up, at least here and there. Every so often. They're not indicative of any kind of pathology if they just happen every so often. If they're repeated, then we deal with it. The question is that normal has to be answered in terms of how often is it? How intense is it? I tell parents, expect anything. That is the law of child rearing. Expect any kind of conduct. You are dealing with a partially socialized, partially moralized, immature human being. Expect them to do whatever comes into their little head for whatever the reason. The duty of a parent is to deal with it. I tell my clients, I'm not frightened by what you tell me your children do. I'm frightened if you're not going to do anything about it. There's the difference. You tell me that you have a little brat of a kid who goes to his room and throws a temper fit for 27 minutes and tries to bust up everything in there, that doesn't bother me as much as if you're not going to do anything about it. Now I start to get worried. The temper fit, we'll deal with that. Yeah, but is that normal? 27 minutes, is that normal? I don't know. But I do know we got to deal with it.
No, 25 is the limit.
That's it.
Beyond that,
you know. 27, you got Geraldo, 32, from a past life, you got Springer.
Sounds like the answer then is to really impart a moral lesson to the child at this point, not to worry and over-psychologize the matter, unless, as you said, it's repeating itself over and over and over again. But if it happens once, twice, or a few times, maybe a parent should just buckle down a little bit in that area.
I got to deal with it. Yeah. I have to deal with it. That is the, I think that should be the mantra of good moms and dads. I'll deal with it. Wonderful Catholic father, father of seven, called me about 2 years ago. His normally sweet, precious 9-year-old daughter took a football and threw it straight into her mother's face. And it was during a temper fit. Apparently, the girl got thwarted. And she flung this football straight at mom. Some Nerf football or something. And I, being a guy, asked, well, did mother catch it? You know, that's all I was concerned about. She catch it, didn't she? Dad was shook. What would possess her to do this? What's going on? Maybe we're missing something. Maybe my daughter's messed up. And as we talked, she sounded like a pretty good kid. She just got on a roll and got mad and wasn't thinking and flung it. Now she got punished pretty good. As far as I know, she's never thrown it since. But Dad was shook because he didn't interpret it just as she threw a fit and she threw a football. He interpreted it as she's unraveling psychologically.
What about you also have something you call Jekyll and Hyde behavior. Explain
that. He's a Jekyll Hyde. He's got a dual personality. Most common way that Jekyll Hyde behavior is manifested, client will walk into my office and they'll say, well, he's pretty strong-willed. He's a very strong-willed child. Very, very, very oppositional, very defiant, just relentless. And I'll say, well, what does the teacher say? About 75% of the time, before the child gets on a roll with other people too, usually fourth grade and below, I hear something like this. Well, he's totally different at school. The teacher doesn't see any of this. And I usually tease him. I say, well, if he's so strong, Will, how do you account for that? I usually get some version of, well, you think he holds it in all day, and then he has to explode? No, I think he knows where the speed limit's 20 and where it's the Autobahn. Jekyll Hyde behavior is the norm. Many parents think it's not the norm. They think that across situations, behavior is pretty consistent. If he's bratty and obnoxious with Grandma, then why isn't he bratty and obnoxious with Uncle Tom? Or if he's nasty to Mom, why doesn't he mistreat Dad that way? Core rule of children, they are very responsive to the conditions, the limits, the discipline, and the confidence of the big person that happens to be around them at the time.
In other words, they're smarter than we might think.
Yes, they're you're a smarter kid than you think. They're brilliant psychologists. They size up. You know, Jerry, I have you babysit my kids, all right? I'll pay you more than you're making on this radio show, I'll tell you that right now. We can't get good babysitters. I have you babysit my children, and they see, oh, Uncle Jerry, he's a great guy. Oh, man, Uncle Jerry, he just gets down, he wrestles with us, he plays with us. What a guy. And after you've babysat about four times, we ask you, well, how's it going, Jerry? And you go, oh, well, I guess I just can't get used to kids. What do you mean by that? Well, sometimes they don't listen. They don't? Well, I don't know. I have trouble getting them to go to bed when they're supposed to, and then they won't pick up their stuff. And Sarah over there, she's getting pretty mouthy sometimes. Well, see, what happened was the kids sized up Uncle Jerry and just decided, oh, let's push on him. They would never try that with their mother because they know exactly what she would do. That explains Jekyll Hyde behavior. All kids are Jekyll Hyde depending upon the strength of the adult who's dealing with them. It's not abnormal.
What about the letter phenomenon?
This is becoming more ubiquitous in our culture. Here's how it works. If you don't socialize a child, for whatever the reason, you don't love them, you don't discipline them, there's minimal stability in their family. For anything from malignant neglect through permissive, spoiled, rotten indulgence. After several years of not being socialized, what can the child look like, Jerry? Depending on the kid, depending on other factors, what can that child look like? Pretty ugly, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Capable of about anything?
Sure.
Violent, aggressive, impulsive, conscienceless conduct. All right. Then a guy like me comes along and says, I'm studying that child. I've concluded that that child is disordered. That child has letters. That child has ODD, ADD, ADHD, LSMFT, IRS, EIEIO. I start flinging letters after him.
There you go.
As if I'm explaining something. Now, I am not saying that these letters don't exist. Although ODD, Oppositional Defiant Disorder, is one of the vague disorders now. And it is nothing but a summary label for a lot of bad behavior. It's not a disorder. However, the implication is something is wrong with you, child. You're not wired right. You're messed up. My response to that is, what do we expect? If we don't do what we need to do as the big people, the child can start to reflect it. And as they get physically bigger, but they don't morally or socially or emotionally or behaviorally progress at the same level, the gap gets large and they start looking kind of, whoa, what's wrong with that kid? And then, this is kindness run amok, in my opinion. We look at the child and go, well, we will help you because obviously you have problems. Well, yes and no. The problems are the conduct's bad, but it's perfectly natural given that I didn't do my job in many respects.
It's OSD, Original Sin Disorder.
Yes, I like that. Very good. Very, very good. I never heard that You make that up?
I just did, yeah.
Well, if you have original sin to the end of your life, then it would be chronic original sin disorder.
Exactly.
COSD. All right. Hope we don't get into eternal original sin disorder.
No.
That's something you don't want to
please
be afflicted
God,
with.
Please God.
My children, as you might know, are all adopted. And my son, John, was 4 when we got him. And he was not well socialized the first 4 years of his life. And he started to get letters. He had more letters after his name, Jerry. He could have spelled another name. None of which have panned out. He's 11 now, close to it. And many of the things that he looked like he had back when he was 4, he doesn't have. But he looked like it because he was unsocialized. The only letters that he has left were the diagnoses I gave him when I first met him. I diagnosed him behaviorally regressive attitudinal trauma. I see you're staring at me blankly. B-R-A-T.
Mm-hmm. I was just trying
to figure out, what's
I was
he
trying
spelling
to recall the word
there?
You said.
Yes. And that's what it was. He was an unsocialized child. He wasn't abnormal. He looked problematic. But that's because for a 4-year-old boy, he wasn't well socialized.
Well, there are a lot of things that we've talked about here, different behavioral patterns in children. Are children normal? What is normal? How do you get a child to be normal and so forth? In our closing few minutes here, I think it'd be good to switch gears and maybe talk a little bit about therapy. You obviously provide that yourself in your own practice and so forth. I imagine there's good therapy and therapy you probably want to stay away from a little bit, maybe over-diagnosis of things. You've already alluded to that a little bit. So how can you tell when therapy might be helpful for a child? Let's just start right there. How do you know if that's the road you should pursue?
My personal approach is that most of the time I work predominantly with the parents, particularly with kids under 10 or 12. Routinely, a call goes something like this. Dr. Ray, this is so-and-so. I was wondering, are you willing to see my son who's 9 years old? I'll say, please tell me what's going on. 90% of the time, behavior problems. He's defiant. He's argumentative. He's difficult. He's indulged. He's rough on his sister. He's not doing his schoolwork. He's very unpleasant. He's unruly. He's recalcitrant.
He's being a kid.
Yeah, to a bad degree. Yeah.
Right.
And I said, well, I'll tell you what. Let's you and I get together. Because I think we need to talk about what's happening in your parenting. Not that they may be causing this, but that maybe they're not responding to it with the firmness that they need to respond to it with. So typically, my approach is I spend most of my time with the parents. If there's adolescence involved, I may see the adolescent a little bit depending on the problem, but if it is mostly a behavior problem, I will see either the parents or the family. So that's the first guiding principle I would say to parents is maybe if you're struggling with this child's behavior, look for somebody that's going to help you. Many of my colleagues are now starting to move that way. When I first came out of school, we pretty much saw the kid. More and more therapists are now saying, oh, no, I spend more of my time with the parents. First thing. Second thing, parents will say, well, how do you know when therapy is necessary? Rule of thumb, if you feel lost and out of control in your parenting. If you're saying to yourself, I can't handle the kid. I just don't know what to do. The things I've tried don't seem to be working. I'm going crazy here. Is it normal to want to slam your child through a plate glass window? Well, when you're that out of control or you're feeling like I don't know what to do, that is one indicator. Talk to somebody. I will tell my parents to come to me. You know, if this is behavior problem stuff, which 90% of it is, you and I can see some pretty dramatic improvements in about 5 visits together. We really can. If you and I work together and you do the kinds of things we're going to talk about, you will see dramatic improvements. If you don't, well, you can visit me for the next 3 years. Nothing will change. We can talk about your son forever. But if you don't take this stuff home and do it, nothing will happen. So I think that's another rule of thumb. I think if you're confused about a particular piece of behavior, talk to somebody, a priest, a friend, somebody you value, another parent. Get an opinion, get some guidance. Sometimes it's reassuring just to know you're not the only one in this boat. Somebody will say, oh, yeah, my kid used to do that. That's one of the great advantages I have, Jerry, about having 10 children. my clients come into me? Pretty close to everything they tell me my kids have done. Now, maybe not to that degree, maybe not that extreme, but if they say, you know what my son did the other day, and they're thinking it's pretty bad, I go, yeah, I remember when my son did that, and they'll look at me like, your kids do that? I go, well, yeah, they did.
That must be a relief for them.
It is a relief, because they're thinking, oh my gosh, I thought he was messed up. I go, no, kids do that.
Now, as long as your next words aren't, that's my son that's now in jail.
There you go. That's right. Yeah. I always ask them. I say, okay, he did that. Now what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
You can't just sit there and go, oh, no. You have to do something.
So really, for the most part, kids are going to be kids. You got to just really be vigilant, discipline. But for the most part, kids are normal. I mean, people shouldn't, from what I hear you saying is people shouldn't worry too much about
the question of normalcy.
Yeah.
Let me give you something to worry about. Parents are much more frightened, for example, of what looks psychological than what looks behavioral. Mom came to me one time and said, oh, my son, I am so worried about his adjustment. You know, he cries real easy. He cries real easy. And he's afraid to get on the bus. You know, he gets on it, but he's just a fretter. He gets on the bus. And he every once in a while he has these nightmares. He wakes up with these nightmares. And she was very, very nervous about what all that meant. And as we talked, it also turned out that he was belligerent, mistreated her, threw fits, lied, and did many other very ugly behaviors. And when I asked her about those, she said, well, I'm not real worried about those. That's just behavior. I'm worried about this other stuff. No. As a general rule of thumb, be more concerned about that behavioral stuff. The research has shown that those children who have what we label quirky psychological things like nightmares or maybe shyness or nervousness in social situations or they cry easy, those are much more likely to be outgrown with time. Chronic misbehavior, if it is not dealt with, has a tendency to blossom and get nastier. And over time, that's the stuff that is much more likely to cause adult problems. So I always tell parents, you want to know what to tackle, go after the behavioral stuff, especially if it's getting real intense and real frequent.
What about, is there any kind of stigma attached to therapy? Parents may be hesitant to go themselves or bring their kids into a situation like that because they think, well, what would our neighbors think or what would we think? You know, we can't possibly get therapy. That indicates a weakness, you know, something is out of order. When, in a sense, I think that's maybe a mental image that our society has portrayed, when really it seems like the reverse is true. You're actually healthier if you want to deal with those things.
Well, there's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is people still are kind of squeamish about therapy at some level, not like they were 20 years ago. The good news is so many people are seeking out therapy that it's fast losing its stigma. Because if you say, I went to counseling, somebody's likely to say, yeah, I did too. Yeah, I was there too. Yeah, my cousin went there too. Oh, we got the same therapist. Yeah, he does the whole family. So there is some of that.
Kind of like going to the same health club.
A little bit. There is a little same. We go to the same mental health club. The other thing is this. Parents have a hard time judging whether the therapy that they're getting is any good. They'll say, I'm a little nervous about what the therapist will tell my son. My son's 12. I give this advice. Make sure you get a therapist who shares your morals, your values, and ideally your faith. Because therefore you can be more secure that the advice and the guidance they'll give dovetails with what you hold most dear. That's the first thing. Don't automatically assume that a therapist thinks like you do. Many parents get shell-shocked to find out, I'm going to take my 13-year-old to a therapist, and you believe what that therapist told my 13-year-old? It's totally antithetical to everything we believe. So you have to watch for that. The second thing about therapy is always, as a parent, ask a lot of questions. Ask why the therapist is saying those things. Ask about their faith. Ask about their worldview. You have every right to ask those questions. If my clients ask those of me, I tell them, I'm Catholic. I believe in God. This is how I see things. This is why I give this advice. If I can't defend what I believe, then leave me and go find another therapist.
Should parents want there to be an active role of faith and things like that, I say Christian Catholic faith, in the counseling, in the therapy itself?
Ideally, yes. Now, many people who come to me are not seeking out my Catholicism. They are seeking discipline guidance. And if the issues broaden out, then maybe we get into religious matters. Because I always ask my clients, on what basis do you teach your children these things? Why is it good not to have him mouth off to his sister? So what? Why not? And then sometimes the religious moral sphere comes up. Ideally, yes. If you're going to move into anything beyond much of basic parenting discipline guidance, you can look and search, and sometimes it's a long search, for a therapist who does share your morals and your worldview.
Well, we're out of time for today. Next time, Dr. Ray, we're going to be looking at how to make discipline work. That's got to be a huge
That's
issue.
The fun stuff.
That's where the rubber hits the road. So, Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Or the hand hits the bottom.
Exactly. Whatever works. Dr. Ray, how can people get more information about you and your work and get in touch with you if they wish?
Probably the simplest way is to go to the website, 3WsKidBrat.com. Sometimes people say, is that really it? Yeah, that's it. KidBrat.com.
All right, next time, making discipline work. Thanks for being with us with Dr. Ray Talks It Over. God bless.